This program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's October 17th, 2022, to be rebroadcast on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org on October 19th, 2022. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, otherwise known as Podium Girl. if you are watching this on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment right down here below. I may be able to respond, and Fran may be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. Let's see. If you have a comment and you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening right here on Facebook Live, make your comment below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. We are recording our shows on Monday now using Facebook Live, and we are then playing them on Wednesday. Oh, Fran is putting a chocolate chicken in front of you.
No, it's not chicken.
Or whatever, turkey.
Yeah.
Yeah, chocolate turkeys, yes. Because you just never know when you need a chocolate turkey. To listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk, you can listen to WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet. Ron's Rant of Week.
Oh.
Roundabouts again? Really, Ron?
Are you going to complain
yep.
about stuff?
It's the roundabout thing. It's a constant discussion.
What?
We're going to talk about it more. Well, because I came up with this idea about it the other day that I'm trying to do some research on roundabouts because I am planning on making a presentation at the Mansfield Town Council meeting. And later this month, there's a point when you go to your local town council meetings, there's usually a point where you can make a public comment on something. And so I'm going to make a public comment because I know about something that is about to happen in town. And they're talking about putting a traffic light in where, it makes as much sense as, I don't know, going out in naked in the snow. How's
yeah.
that? That's a
sense.
That's
like a to do that.
That's a sensible thing to do. Yeah, for all day? No, I don't think so.
Oh no.
But anyway, we'll talk about it in a bit. But that's my rant. I'll get on to it later on. We will talk about it more in the show. Hello. Oh, look, it's Bob and Chris are on. Hey guys, how you doing? So, on a positive side. Always a shout out to Billy Too Tall Dujack and Laura Mullaly.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we saw Laura's kids yesterday.
We did, Keith and Kevin.
Yeah, they were at the cyclocross race.
Yes.
And, you know, best wishes again from Fran and I for speedy recoveries for both of you. Billy, I'm sorry you couldn't make it out and weren't feeling good yesterday.
Aww.
But, you know, we'll catch up. We always, actually, already did. We already talked this morning.
Oh,
you did? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I talk to Billy almost every day. Yeah, we got a thing going on. Anyway, the 2022 Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross Race. It's over. It's positive. It's definitely a positive.
Yay.
We had a great day, didn't we, Fran?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was beautiful weather. It was gorgeous. We had bunches of people show up. I think that we may have, according to my friend John, shout out to John Hankins, we may have broken the record for course cleanup because we were out of there very, very quickly. It was really cool. So anyway, I'm going to talk a little bit more about cyclocross race as we get into the show. Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. Everything happens for a reason, okay? So the reason I can come up with ideas to talk about as far as Mechanical Minutes go is because something happens that reminds me of why I am not a big fan of tubeless tires. Yeah, everybody's gone tubeless. Tubeless is the way to go. You put them on your road bike, they ride almost like or just like what? Tubulars, things we've been riding on for years. I'm an old school guy. I still ride on them. I like them. They're nice. I also ride on clinchers, but my clinchers have tubes in the inside of them. So there's a reason. So tubeless tires work. I think that they work exceptionally well on a road bike. I think they work exceptionally well on a mountain bike where you need to run super low pressures. And it's a way to avoid getting pinch flats. I don't think they're a good idea on cross bikes. And I'm going to tell you why. Because as I was talking to people and walking around the cross race yesterday, having chats, I'm going, hey, how'd your race go? Well, did real good until I burped a tire. Well, what burping a tire means is that you squish out your tubeless tire enough so that it pushes all the air out. And then you have an immediate flat. That's really not a great way to finish your race. Especially when you've spent all this time preparing yourself for it. You spent all this money and energy getting yourself out to the cross race. And then you get a lap or maybe even a half a lap into your race and you blow a tire out because you use tubeless tires. I'm just not real big on it. Now, Stan Kozatek from Stan's No Tubes says, any tire that fits too loosely on the rim will burp air easier than a tighter tire when mounted tubeless. Okay, so DNFs at cross race due to burped tubeless tires. We had a bunch. It doesn't, if it had just been one person that had the problem, I'd say, no big deal. But we had more than one. We had more than two. There were people that were burping tubeless tires at the cross race. Now, our cross course is a real cross course. It is, it's not a, a grass crypt behind a school somewhere, which has been a tradition in some promoters' eyes as to what you do for a cross race. We've got serious off-road riding. We've got roots. We've got rough and bumpy areas. We've got some gravelly areas on our course, and we've got a bunch of off-camber on our course too. And off-camber has become a big hit over the years. I like to feel like this is a shout out to my friend Justin Manville, who put in the longest off camber that I had seen in a cross race a number of years ago when he was promoting this race. And so I liked it. Everybody else seemed to like it. Everyone complained about it. That's exactly what you're looking for. So we kept it in there, and we had it there again this year. And then I've got a couple of other places that I send people, riders, on an off-camber situation. It requires a little bit more skill and know-how as far as riding goes. But then we go on to the tubeless tire. And it's just... people are running into problems with them when they're hopping and landing sideways in corners, that sort of thing. That's when you're going to run into problem with your tubeless tire. People like to run lower pressures because you get more grip on the off-cambered situations. But should you get all that grip and be doing really well with it because the tire is squashing and sliding sideways, just like a tubular, by the way, would, then if you catch like a small stone, it doesn't take anything really much at all. If you catch something when you are running on that off-camber area, it'll burp your tire. So when it burps your tire, you got a flat. And now you're looking for the pit, and sometimes the pit is a long ways away, and the only thing you can do is get off your bike and start running. If you were riding on tubulars and you got a flat, which it does happen occasionally, flat tires do happen, you can still ride the tire. You can still ride the wheel without destroying it because you've got a lot of rubber sitting underneath you. It's not perfect, and it's not the answer for sure. We watched back in 2017 in Hartford, we watched Stephen Hyde ride on a flat tire for almost a half of a lap before he then crashed the bike out on an off camber in the snow. What a great race that was. And when he went down, he broke his rear derailleur off the bike. Fortunately, he was very, very close to the finish line, and he was able to run up and over a hill, and then he hopped back on the bike, coasted down the bottom, hopped off the bike again, and then ran to the finish line, winning the race by 3 seconds. So Stephen is a New England rider, a seasoned New England rider, I will say, and knew what to do and handled the situation really, really well. And he could have lost a national championship over that, but he didn't. He won it. So anyway, here's the answer. Don't hop and land sideways in corners. Okay? That's it. That's one. Another one is if you're on an off camber and there's any chance of it being an irregular surface of sorts, i.e. having stones or roots or anything on it, you're probably going to burp the tire. It's going to happen. So my feeling is just say no to tubeless tires. That's my, that didn't really start out as a rant, but became a rant, didn't it? That's my mechanical minute. I think the tubeless tires are, they have a place, and just don't use them on your cross bike. That's my feeling. Anyway, or run your pressure a little higher. Now you run the pressure a little higher, you take the risk of sliding out on an off camber. You also take the risk of getting beat up on the bike because you're going to take a lot more of that impact upon yourself. So my feeling is, if it's not a problem, don't create it. So go to tubulars. Tubulars are definitely, if you're getting really, really competitive with cyclocross and it's really turning into your newest passion and you can't believe how much fun it is and you want to get better at it and you want to be able to handle the race more competitively as far as grip and surface, go to tubulars. That's the way to go. Hi, Fran.
Hi.
Why are you in there?
Because
Deb Duffney is watching.
I know.
Hi, Deb.
When you
so
you're broadcasting on your phone.
I am.
And I'm watching.
Okay.
I'm not watching from your account.
What? Why is this relevant?
Because it notifies you.
Oh, it's for you, Billy.
It notifies you of more people that are watching than it notifies me. So, like where it says Deb Dauphiné is watching,
yeah.
It doesn't say it on mine.
Well,
so that's why I'm looking, I can say hello to Deb.
Someday when you upgrade to Apple products, maybe you will see things more.
That's not happening.
Shout out to Apple. I've been an Apple guy for a long time. Here's the biggest, you know how you make these classic big mistakes in your life and you know,
I like
I like to eat apples too. Well, my biggest mistake was that I started buying Apple products before Apple products were anything at all, and they were kind of losing money big time, and they weren't in any condition to stay alive as a business went, but my school system was using Apple products, and I had a 2-year-old or a 1-year-old son, and I knew he was going to the school system, and I wanted to make sure that he had the same thing at home that he would see in school. So I bought an Apple computer. This is my word of advice. If you ever see anything out there that you think is really innovative and might possibly go anywhere with it, take the money you spent on the product and match it with stock option. Buy stock. If I'd done that, I could have retired 30 years earlier. But anyway, whatever. That's hindsight, and it's like the time machine. Go back in time. What do you do? You buy Google, you buy Apple, you buy whatever, you know, whatever. Anyway, that's not really bicycles. We're gonna move forward here. So what else have I got here? Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross. So anyway, comments. A couple comments on the race. First of all, I had not one, but two 2021 national champions there yesterday, which was really, really cool. And they both came wearing their Stars and Stripes jerseys. Very cool again, which makes it now that we have yet more people that have worn or turned into wearing a national championship jersey on the Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross course. Then I'm gonna stick my nose out here real far here, and I'm gonna say, any other course in New England? Just saying, that's all. I've had a lot of them, and I also had the luxury years and years ago when Bill Sykes was promoting Plymouth Cyclocross out in Carver, Carver High School in Massachusetts, that I would always run the race the week before that nationals were, and so I attracted a crowd of people that had come out a week or two early to get used to New England Cross before going to a nationals course in New England. And so anyway, it was I think that's probably why I've had more national champions on my course than any other place, but kind of cool stuff. So anyway, another thing that I wanted to throw out there. So one of our national champions is Dave Rustico, otherwise known to all of us as Rusty. And Rusty was there. He had won the 65 plus nationals last year, Masters. And he showed up. And of course, that made it a little bit more difficult for the other 60 plus riders. But my friend Keith Enderle, who has been with me through this whole thing, and he helped with development of the course. He was out there with Dave Geisert and I, and we were all working on the course over a month before anything happened. Probably really kind of started about 2 months before the race. We all met down there and like threw some ideas around, rode around, and just kind of got some ideas about what we wanted to do. So anyway, Keith got third yesterday in the Masters 60 plus men's. Very, very cool. And there were comments all over Facebook, of course, because it was the race yesterday. And Keith says, I believe it was 1987 that my friend Ron Meniza convinced me to enter my first cyclocross race that he was promoting at Mansfield Hollow. I remember the bike I rode, a blue Raleigh road bike, toe clips and straps, running shoes, and coming in dead last.
Awesome.
I did one other cross race that year with the same result. Fast forward to 2010 when I decided to give cross another attempt. This time Mansfield Hollow was my third race of the season, and I ended up on lap one as with a separated shoulder and surgery. But I was hooked in on this crazy sport. I remember seeing him. He hit this. We had it was like a pile of gravel that we were sending people over, and he just hit it all wrong, and it was a beautiful flip in the air. I gotta say, it was you know, very noteworthy. If someone had caught that on video, it would have been a cool thing. But he went down real hard, and I looked and I went, oh my God, look at that rider, he's going down. And I went, oh, it's Keith. And I ran over, and you know, his wife Paula was there, and we were very concerned. But anyway, yeah, he separated his shoulder and he had surgery, but he was hooked on the crazy sport. 11 years and over 190 races later, I was so thrilled to finally earn a spot on the podium at Mansfield Hollow, sharing a podium with great racers and friends. Dave Rustico and Kevin Callahan made it even better. And Ron Meniza, who started it all, is promoting New England Classic Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross. Thank you. Still promoting. So that was one comment we got. I got a few of them here. Our friend Kim DeBoard, who was out there. And also, big shout out to Kim, because Kim was also out with her wife, Sherry, the day before. And they were helping me string tape and, you know, doing course preparation and all Really, really appreciate that. Sherry got to take a lap that day. Kim took her around, and Sherry said, "This is not the sport for me." So she decided that maybe that wasn't such a great idea, but that's fine. She was there, and they were supporting Kim. She and another friend were supporting Kim. They had little Kim faces. Did you see the Kim faces that they were carrying around?
I took a picture
around?
Of the Kim
faces. Oh, you did. Okay. And anyway, it was just a good time. So Kim says, such a great race today at Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross, except for my result. super fun. Ronman is a course that Sherry and I helped set up on Saturday. So many friends out there cheering for me, plus my own personal fan club, complete with Kim heads on a stick. Very, very funny. Sherry made me smile every time I saw them. Had a great start. She did have a great start. She nailed the whole shot right away. It was very, very cool. And Fran's holding us up in front of the camera so you guys can see it. So very, very cool. So thanks to everyone here today for your support, especially my number one athletic supporter. Yay, Sherry. Cool, cool. And then there's some GoPro videos there and all. You can find all this on the Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross Facebook page, by the way. And if you were there yesterday and you took some photos, please share them on that page. I'd really appreciate that. The more photos we get up there, the better off we are. So it's all good stuff. And anyway, it's a brisk, foggy, damp start, fall in New England. Cross crew will be taking on Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross today, a race that's been around for decades, and it's always a local favorite. Best of luck to everyone between the tape. And that comes from Dave Rustico. So, really cool. Hey, Rusty, big fan. I think we're fans of each other. That's a good thing. It's an okay thing, right? So, that wasn't from Dave. This is from Dave. So great to race again after 4 weeks off. Promoter Ron Meniz and his crew, including Dave Geisert and Keith Enderle, who designed the course at Mansfield Hollow State Park, did another outstanding job. This race was founded by Ron in 1983, the oldest cross race in Connecticut. I did that inaugural race. Dave and I talked about that, actually. Followed by my second cross race 33 years later in 2016 at Hop Brook State Park. Fortunate enough to share the podium today with Kevin Callahan and Keith Enderle. That was the post from Dave. So anyway, we had a great time. It was fun. Fran was my podium girl. So if you got the chance to get up on the podium, Fran was handing out the prizes. So now that we've gone past the whole COVID thing, there's no more kisses. There's no more side kisses. I don't think we do that anymore.
No.
But me, that's kind of one of those things. And of course, if you're in Europe now, the podium girls have been banned because it's sexist or I don't know. Who knows?
Well, that's why I dress up in either flannel or tie-dye or...
Flannel or tie-dye, yeah.
I couldn't do...
Yeah, classic fall colors, you know, the whole New England thing.
I couldn't dress up too warm yesterday because it was in the high 60s.
Yeah.
So I got really warm and I had to pull out a short sleeve shirt and...
It was a warm, beautiful day. There's no question about that.
I was wearing batik shorts, a hippie skirt, and a tie-dye t-shirt.
It's cross.
And
I mean, you never know what you're going to see at cross. There could be a chicken.
Tutus.
There could be a chicken.
Could be a chicken and there could be tutus.
We had a chicken. The chicken was out, and if this is a visual for those of you who are listening, I apologize that I'm using a visual on a podcast, but it was out laying these little eggs for people to pick up, and there's little treats inside of the eggs. But yes, we have a chicken, and that's my friend Garth, who goes into character like you would not believe. Very, very funny. If you check the Facebook page, you can probably see a copy of an old video that they made with him, that our friend Amy made with him a number of years ago. So good stuff. What else do I have here? We're going to put this away and we're going to go down here. So anyway, cross results are up and online already. Unbelievable crew yesterday between Alan Atwood and Atwood Racing Services. Great job. He's my fave as far as that goes. He's always very, very good with the camera at the finish line and getting the results right. And I also have him do my registration too. So everything is really, really in order and in just, I don't even have to think about it. And then, of course, Mike Conlon and Joe Kidd, who are my officials yesterday. I got the A-team. That's all I can say. The reason my race goes so smoothly, the reason the whole thing comes together, because everyone that works with me is the A-team. They're all very, very good. So we just had a blast. We just had a really, really good time yesterday, and so did everybody else. And we had a lot of people that are avid followers of the Mansfield Hall of Cyclocross and have come back year after year after year. Okay, that's it. I can't talk about it anymore because I've run out of race. I'm done. That's it. My race for the year. Boom, boom. So I'm going to go back to the rant because the rant is, I'm going to probably continue to talk about this off and on throughout many episodes, many future episodes of Bicycle Talk until I maybe grab somebody's attention here and get people to pay attention on this. Like I said, I am scheduled to go to a town council meeting coming up in a week, I think. I have to look at my calendar to be sure because the town council meets every couple of weeks, or I can't remember exactly how it works. But I am going to make a public comment about roundabout on Route 275. Now, Route 275 in Storrs is a state road. And it is also known as South Eagleville Road. It is on the very southern edge of the University of Connecticut campus. And it is very busy. And it is narrow and has little to no shoulder for a large portion of it until you get closer to campus, in which case at that time, when you're getting close to campus and getting close to the community center and the town hall, it widens up there and it's got a pretty sizable shoulder, which is easier to work with than the rest of the road is. Otherwise, it's narrow and it's 35 mile an hour posted speed, but no one goes 35 miles an hour on it. It drops down to a 30 mile an hour posted speed when it gets to the wide section and people just go faster because it's wider, because it's quote unquote, as we know, deadly by design. This is a DOT problem and it's a problem that needs to be resolved, and there are towns across the country that are paying attention to this and figuring it out. And I talk about it all the time. I know it's like beating a dead horse, but it's, you know, it's something that we really need to continue to focus on and discuss because it saves lives, and not just lives of cyclists like us who are, you know, we're pretty cool about our lives. We kind of like our lives. We like being fit and active and being able to transport ourselves without having to rely on anything outside of just our bicycles. Pedestrians, same thing. You know, being a pedestrian doesn't necessarily mean that you're just walking down a sidewalk. It could also mean that you are using your body to transport yourself. Pedestrians are transportation. That's why when I look at the Department of Transportation, especially in this state, it has been referred to over the years as the Department of Cars and Trucks, because it doesn't seem like they pay attention to the important things, which is that if you have rising gas prices and you have increased infrastructure costs because of heavier vehicles on the roads, and you have just all these concerns that are being directed towards costing more money to live in general, people are going to resort back to the basics. And the basics are, we are human beings and we can move our bodies. We can move our bodies by ourselves without the need for motorized transportation. Yes, you can. There are people out there that require motorized transportation. I understand that. There are working vehicles. There are people with disabilities. There's certainly a lot of ways that the automobile and the motorized vehicle has helped us all in our lives. But at the same time, it's killing us. So I was thinking about this last week, and I'm going, I wonder what it costs to put a roundabout in on the road, and I wonder what it costs to put a traffic signal in on a road. Well, the costs are all over the map, okay, everywhere. Every situation is different. There are land right issues where eminent domain comes in, or land has to be purchased to be able to make a roundabout bigger. Same thing for a four-way intersection with a traffic light, especially if it's widened to the new standards that are out there. So there can be a lot of things that are different. Neighborhood intersections, for like a neighborhood type intersection, a roundabout can be installed for approximately, and this, like I said, it's a wide field here, between $25,000 and $100,000, with landscape roundabouts raising the cost from about $45,000 to $150,000. So if you want your roundabout to look nice, and you also want to take care of the landscaping all around your roundabout, it can add a lot of cost onto it, for sure. And that was a very, very general comment. As I looked into it deeper, I found a lot more information out there. Long-term costs are considered. Roundabouts eliminate hardware, maintenance, electrical costs associated with traffic signals, which can cost between $5,000 and $10,000 a year. That's from September 25th, 2012. All right. So as I look into this a little bit more, I start seeing more and more comments out there. This is someone who has 35 years of traffic highway operations and engineering. Okay. Traffic engineer, right? He says, there is a signalization project currently under construction in Derry, New Hampshire. The traffic signal system costs about $225,000, while the total construction cost is $1.2 million. This includes realignment work on two side roads, drainage, pavement markings, signs, and other costs. The low bid for the traffic signal item itself was $191,000, which includes the mast arms and the poles, the signal heads, the controller cabinet, and the internal wiring. It does not include conduit. Okay. This $1.2 million cost also excludes design costs and right-of-way acquisition. How much does a traffic light cost? It costs a lot of money. It costs a whole lot of money. And it's the gift that just keeps on giving, because there's also electrical costs and maintenance associated with putting in a traffic signal. I don't know why any town that has an engineer that is under budget has any other thoughts but to not do a traffic signal. I mean, they just don't make sense. So here we go. Here's another former retired traffic signal maintenance foreman. Okay, this gentleman was employed between 1984 and 2015. He says, there is no typical cost there. There is no typical cost. There are multiple variables. Whether or not you need to put conduit in the ground under the road is a major concern regarding costs. In a rural area, you may get away with putting up a couple of good wood poles and running a span wire between them. With a traffic control box on the poles connected to the utility company, utility company overhead as well. This is going to be the cheapest type of installation with no left turn arrows or pedestrian signals. You're probably looking at around $40,000 to $50,000. If you have to put a box out of conduit under the roads and poured pole foundations for signal poles with mast arms and pedestrian poles and pedestrian signals, you can easily get into the $500,000 or more price range. This person has been retired for almost 4 years now, so does not have access to current prices, but I've seen plenty of installations all over the cost spectrum. Go back to Derry, New Hampshire, where it was $1.2 million. I'm just pointing this out. A signalized intersection does not use much electricity. Okay. So, you know, that was my thing. It's like, okay, so you put this thing up, and now, going back to the taxpayers, going back, somebody's got to pay for the electricity to run the light, right? The light is not running just a couple of hours in the day. The light is running 24/7. So there's new lighting that's coming out now that's LED instead of incandescent, and so that helps a lot. But let's assume there are three signals on each approach: a left turn lane, a through lane, and a right turn lane. Sounds right? If you're riding your bike up, you see these all the time. Which lane do I get into on my bike? The same lane you would if you were driving a motorized vehicle. That's the correct answer there. But anyway, and you get into the middle of the lane, so no one crowds you out with a motorized vehicle. That's a little tip from Pedal and Ron about how to ride in traffic. If you want to know how to ride in traffic, you need to learn how to drive in traffic. Because when you drive your bike, you'll be much safer. That's another little tip from Pedal and Ron. So we go back to this description here. That's 12 signal heads with three 100-watt incandescent bulbs in each, but only one bulb is lit at a time. That means that the light bulbs are using about 1,200 watts of electricity per hour, or 1.2 kilowatt hours, which adds up to 1.2 kilowatt hours times 24 hours per day times 30 days per month for a total of 864 kilowatt hours per month. For comparison, a home with a family of four typically uses about 900 kilowatt hours per month. So a set of signals that uses the same amount of energy as a family home. The national average cost for electricity, not in this state, is 12 cents per kilowatt hour. We're at least double that, bringing the total electric cost to $104 a month, or $1,244 per year. Setback, state of Connecticut, okay? Our electric costs here are at least 24 cents a kilowatt hour. By the time we get delivery and all, that's what we're looking at right now. So take that $104 a month times two, or the $1,244 times two, and you've got a significant amount of money that is used just to control traffic at one intersection. That's one. How many lights are in your town? Go out, the next time you're out riding your bicycle, you're going to go on, this is a Pedal and Ron task for you, and a good reason to get out and ride your bike. Go out and count how many traffic lights there are in your town. Come back and do the math and figure it out. I think you'll be overwhelmed by the cost of what it takes to keep people from crashing into one another at intersections. Side note, they still do it. As a matter of fact, there are more deaths at traffic lit intersections where we have traffic control lights than there are at roundabouts by an enormous amount. There is the town out in the Midwest that just removed all their traffic lights and put roundabouts in. They had an 87% reduction in fatalities. And that's not just pedestrians and cyclists. That's including people in cars, because people run into each other even though there's a light. How many times have you sat at a light and you're all set to go, and it goes green on you, and someone runs the red light at super high speed.
Yes.
Right on through the light.
That's a thing.
That is the increased possibility of a fatality, because it's a side impact at high speed, and it's just, let's stop the madness. So let's consider a capital cost of a roundabout. No two roundabouts are the same, but the New Hampshire DOT is currently constructing a roundabout in Ossipee with a total construction bid of about $2,250. Did I mention $1.2 million in another place in New Hampshire? $1.2 million versus $2,250. That does not include design and right-of-way costs. Okay, let's talk about that right-of-way cost, just so you know how this whole thing works. There may be some additional right-of-way costs when you're putting in a traffic circle or a roundabout, because it's got to span this larger area. And so therefore, you may have to buy up some land around the area. So that's a possibility. Plus other things that happen. And one thing that is happening where the one where I'm going to have the discussion, where it's already been approved that there will be a light there, by the way. I'm trying to stop this. But anyway, we're going to see what we can do. And I'll keep you all updated on this as I find out more from my town officials and the state DOT and the other fine people that I'm working with here or will be working with if they pay attention to what I have to say. So So you may have a little bit of land cost. What happens if there is a wetland near where you want to put this intersection in? Now we open another can of worms here. That is one of the can of worms that is apparently at this intersection that I'm looking at right now. By the way, if you're a local person and you know anything about the University of Connecticut, the intersection that I am pointing in the direction of is the corner of Separatist Road and Route 275, also known as South Eagleville Road. There, right across the street from Separatist Road, there is Juniper Village, I think is what it's called. Is that what it is? It's a 55 and over housing.
I think you're right.
That's over there. And there's a big chunk of space over there. They could move the whole intersection over, and they've got plenty of room and to do whatever kind of land grab they may have to do to stay away from the wetland. And that would extend the end of Separatist Road out into 275 a little bit further. But again, roundabout. This also is being encouraged because there is a walkway that the town of Mansfield built a number of years ago, and it is all along Separatist Road. It's beautiful. It's really, really nice. It just runs right alongside. It's very wide. You could ride your bike on it. You can walk on it. It's very safe. It's a protected lane, essentially, and it goes all along Separatist Road, so it's kind of cool, all the way over to Hunting Lodge Road, I think that's what it's called. So anyway, and it also accesses up to campus, so you can get to university housing, you can get to the baseball field, you can get to the ice hockey field rink, so there's all sorts of things there that you can access. But it's like on game night, and we have something up here called UConn basketball, which seems to be kind of a big deal. We also have hockey on campus, and they're building a new arena, I heard, too. And that's why this whole project is being discussed right now, because of traffic flow to and from the hockey rink. Let it be known, you can move 30 to 33% more traffic without the light than you can with the light. Enough said? All right. Now, do you know why I rant about this all the time? Do you know why this just drives me nuts? This is common sense. This is not rocket science. It's traffic engineering. And traffic engineering is, it's a thing. So here we go. Let's add just a little bit more in here. Okay? If you drive a motorized vehicle or if you ride a bicycle, you spend time doing that. Right? Right? If you're riding a bicycle, it takes you longer to get from point A to point B, but look at all the benefits you're getting by doing it. You're not polluting the atmosphere. Okay, you're doing a tremendous amount of self-help for yourself because you're being physically active and you're getting the cardiovascular bonus of riding your bicycle. And health and fitness is a beautiful thing. It really is. Cuts down medical costs. There's just a bunch of reasons why it's good to ride your bike. Okay, when you're driving your car, I couldn't resist this one. I saw this and I went, oh my God, this is brilliant. Time wasted at traffic lights is astounding. You could get some of it back. This is a factor I had not even thought about. How much time do I spend sitting at a traffic light? Is time that important to me? It's always important to me. Of course it is. You need, every time you waste time, you feel like you're wasting away a piece of your life. So that's not really a good thing. Now, this article this was brought out in May of 2021, and it was in a site called Design News. And it was mentioned here, artificial intelligence, one of the scariest things that we're doing here on this planet, promises, it didn't say that in the article, by the way, promises to save $50 million in lost time at traffic lights in one county alone. All right. Okay. That's because they seem to have figured out how to operate their traffic lights better. I don't get this. Just how much time is lost as a result of the shift from live traffic cops directing intersections to the much cheaper alternative of automated traffic lights. And it's been illustrated by a test of artificial intelligence applied to an Arizona intersection that promises huge gains in time saved for drivers. Palo Alto, California, Tel Aviv, Israel based no traffic is testing what it says based no traffic is testing what it says is the world's first autonomous traffic management platform, and the early results reveal how much wasted time there is to be recovered at traffic lights. Can you believe this? Can you believe this? The company conducted a product validation study of an intersection in Arizona's Maricopa County, which is the fastest growing county in the country and has a population of 4.5 million people. Stated goals for the project were to reduce the total delay time for all road users, vehicles, pedestrians, cyclists, to improve the intersection's level of service, which is a benchmark of average delay time, and to maintain detection accuracy and reliability to improve safety for all road users.
Maricopa County's where Phoenix is.
Oh, of course it is. Of course it is. By the way, why are you increasing this? Where are you going to get your water to drink? That's another story. We won't even get into that. So vehicle delay time at the project and intersection yielded a time-saving reduction to the Arizona, to the residents during 1 week of operations, estimated at 322 hours, 13 days. 13 days of time wasted at traffic lights. Why are we putting up more traffic lights? What is the reason? I just don't get it. They're dangerous. People on bicycles do not know how to navigate them. They have no clue. People in motorized vehicles, when you do get a cyclist who knows what he's doing at that traffic signal, get mad at them for being in their way. This is just backwards. We're going in the wrong direction here. Oh God, I'm off on a rant. I'm sorry. But this is common sense. Can someone please introduce me to the professor of common sense so that I can go to his class and or her class and take a class in common sense and learn from it? This is not rocket science.
Would you like a chocolate turkey?
Would you like a I think this is time for Fran to put the chocolate turkey on the screen.
This is very nice. They had them in fall colors.
For those of you who are listening, Fran is showing me a chocolate turkey, and everyone
is,
else who might be watching
this is a rainbow
chocolate
turkey.
It's very nice, Fran.
Okay. I got them when I had to buy the extra hot cups at the Big Y.
That's nice. So anyway, going back to bicycle talk and what we do here, it just seems like I'll report back to you in a few weeks as to what my results are here. If I have to petition this thing, I'm going to go all the way with it. I cannot see any reason for putting something in that, especially on game night at UConn, which we have two major basketball programs growing there, consistently. When you park in the parking garage, another really bad idea, by the way, you park in the parking garage. If you get out of that garage after the game is over in an hour, you're about average. Okay, it takes about an hour to get out
of
the parking garage.
That's why we like to park further away.
That's why what Fran and I do is we park on South Campus and we walk up. But guess what? Is in line for South Campus real soon.
Another parking garage.
But common sense is something that we cannot really appreciate until everyone has it. Thank you. Anyway, there we go. And when they do that, you know what that's going to do. It's going to force you to park in a parking garage for event night. When you park in a parking garage at event night, you pay more money to do so. And you lose all the free parking that we have right now, which will not be free anymore because everybody's got their fingers in the pie. And parking services on the UConn campus, just so you know, and this is a fairly well-known fact, between traffic tickets and parking fees and all the other things that go around, it's over $1 million a year in revenue for the University of Connecticut. So, you know, why not put up another garage? We can make more money. That was an audible sigh. And I just don't get it. But this is where we're at. So we put up a roundabout. The roundabout cost is under $5,000, okay? And the traffic light could be as much as $1.2 million. I'm just weighing this out as a, I'm going to go for a stretch here, a political stretch here. I'm weighing this out as a taxpayer. What do I want to pay for? Do I want to pay for a traffic signal that will slow me down and make it so that it takes me longer to get where I need to go? Or do I want to pay for a roundabout, which costs far less money, moves traffic quicker and cleaner, and also causes less deaths in motorized vehicles, as well as bicycles, as well as pedestrians? Can't talk about it enough. Probably won't ever stop talking about it enough until I start seeing things moving in a positive direction. That's what I got today for us. I know I have other things in here too. People for Bikes has recommended Class 1 e-bikes for mountain bike trails. That's kind of a big deal. We may have to bump this on to next week because I am certainly running out of time here and I won't be able to get us into this any further. I have another thing which I will discuss next week too, and that is the Consumer Product Safety Commission finds micromobility injuries rose 127% since 2017. And there's some really interesting information there too, which we will discuss next week. So I am going to save this out for next week's show, and we will talk a little bit more about what is going on there, because there's some great information in there. Once again, we just have to, we have to get loud. We have to get out. We got to talk to people about it. you guys know how this works with me. On October 22nd, we will have, which is next weekend, there will be the annual Belltown Cyclocross Race in East Hampton, Connecticut. Great race. Come on down, check it out. Check out my friend Jake, who announced my event yesterday and did an outstanding job with it. He will be announcing there too. So a shout out to Jake and more Connecticut Cyclocross, which is really cool. On October 29th, the following weekend, my friend Hunter is involved with Cheshire Cross. And so check out Cheshire Cross. And we've got lots of Connecticut Cyclocross. We have 3 weekends in a row here. Really, really nice. So anyway, these are important things on my calendar. And I got a couple more things on the calendar down here too. The Connecticut Historical Society, starting in November of 2022, has the Bicycle Game on Early History of Bicycles in Hartford, Connecticut. From October 29th to the 30th, there is the 2022 Philly Bike Show, Bike Expo, open to the public. It's kind of a cool thing to go check out. That's a really neat thing. In December, the 2022 USA Cycling Cyclocross National Championships are coming to Hartford, Connecticut. Am I a big believer in Connecticut Cross? You bet I am. We got nationals coming in for the second time. I never thought I'd ever see it in this state, and this will be our second time since 2017. Finishing points, continue shout-outs to Too Tall Billy and Laura Mullaly. Laura, I am so happy to see you out of the rehab center. It's great. Talking to your kids yesterday was really, really cool. It's just a great thing. Heal up, both of you. Get back out on your bikes. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and the price of gas and the lack of places to safely ride and join the revolution of change. Remember, when presenting to your local governments, come with solutions, not complaints or problems. Positive beats negative every time. I'll let you know how this works out in a week. Please support your local bike shop. Respect one another. It's 2022. Initiate, participate, ride your bike, and tell everyone you know. And finally, take the Pedal and Ron Challenge. If you have a motorized vehicle, park it one day and use your bike. Just one day. You may surprise yourself. The views on this program do not express the views, reflect the views of the staff or management or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live, on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or on a podcast, and you'd like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet. If you'd like to contribute information, drop me an email. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. Take care. See you next week. I say, Royce. I say, God, give me a choice. I say, Lord. I say, Christ, I do.